You've done something really stupid. It's so embarrassing. And you're blushing bright pink. Or maybe you've turned red-faced in anger over something. How much does your skin reveal about what you're feeling? And how much has our knowledge of the skin changed and evolved over the years? We'll soon get into what people thought about the skin centuries ago. But first of all, let's meet Dr. Rachel Manifold. She's a dermatologist in Adelaide. Hey, Rachel, what sparked your interest in dermatology in the first place?
Well, my interest first began when I was working as an intern in a war veterans hospital, and we were doing a lot of skin surgery. And I quite liked this component of medicine as a procedural element that wasn't too invasive, but you saw an instant result and crucial for patients. So from then I looked into dermatology, and it appealed to me because it's a diverse specialty. There's a combination of both medical as well as surgical and other procedural types of medicine, and there's also a cosmetic component. So it offers a lot, and it's also especially where you tend to keep your patients. Not always, but you often have the ability to develop a good rapport because you are managing them over a period of time.
So, Rachel, how does modern medicine understand the skin and its function? We're going to get onto that historically in a moment, but let's just get the sort of modern version.
Well, the skin is a hugely important organ. It's a very large organ, and it has a number of functions, which includes acting as a barrier to prevent fluid loss. It also helps to prevent infection from organisms. It has both a sort of an outer layer called the epidermis, which does those acts in that manner. And then there's the underlying dermis, which has the vessels and the lymphatics and nerves. And the function of the dermis is to allow communication between external and internal environments, also to provide nutrition and circulation. It's important in the immune function. And the skin overall is obviously important in our perceived physical attractiveness and beauty.
Well, this is how we know the skin now, but what was the thinking 500 or more years ago? Evelyn Welsh is Professor of Renaissance Studies at King's College London. Renaissance skin is her thing. And Evelyn, you say that early modern Europeans thought of the skin as a kind of fishing net. Now, what does that mean?
Thank you, Amanda. The fishing net as a not just a metaphor, it's what skin really was conceptualized as. So skin in the past, and this is the ancient past as well as the 16th and 17th century, isn't an organ. It's a place that allows things in and out. So you need to allow air in, but you need to be very, very careful. But above all, you have a body that's thought of in a completely different way than we think of our bodies today. Bodies are hot and cold, wet and dry, and they're full
These
of
are the,
vapors.
The humours.
These are the humours. So the body of somebody in the 16th and 17th century is just conceptualized in a totally different way than we think of it today. So when you blush because of internal shame, and the heat that's caused by that shame brings your blood to your cheeks.
Isn't that the same now, though, Rachel?
Well, certainly when you blush, it is due to the vessels dilating, the small vessels in the skin, and there are a range of things that can promote this or trigger this.
Evelyn, tell me more then about that Renaissance view and how and why it's different to current thinking.
So if you think about the body as being a microcosm of the universe, the universe is made up of earth, air, fire, and water. That's what you are. And you come in different sizes and shapes of liquids. So blood, black and yellow, bile, phlegm. These are flowing around your system. And the combination of your humours makes you, for example, choleric, hot-tempered, or sanguineous, pretty even-tempered, or phlegmatic, or above all, melancholic there, which is an over-exuberance of black bile. And people who are desperately in love are melancholic.
And is that evidenced on the skin?
And you can see this in the coloration of the skin. So somebody who's choleric, for example, would be very ruddy. Someone who is phlegmatic is pale white. And of course, this is also an explanation for black skin as well, which is due primarily to the heat within the body, the sort of boiling up of the humours that make your skin black.
Well, now, Evelyn, late into the Renaissance, this understanding of skin started to shift, I think. Yeah, because why?
So what happens is, and the thing that makes me fascinated about it, is what does it mean to think about your body in a completely different way than we do today?
I mean, I really love that idea of your body being a microcosm of the universe.
Yes. So you're affected by all the things that make up the earth, air, fire, and water. You're also impacted by the movement of the stars. So the medicines that you take, the bloodletting that you do, the cupping that is very popular from ancient Rome through to the 17th century and has come back today, there is all designed to be done at the right time of the year, the right time of the day or night for your particular individual humour, but yet you're also reflected in the stars. Now, what happens in the 17th century is people start taking bits of skin and looking it under this newfangled instrument called a microscope. Yeah. And they can't quite work out what it is they're seeing. So are they seeing what will be called cells? There, Robert Hooke talks about seeing cells. Are they talking about seeing scales? Anton van Leeuwenhoek, a Dutch microscopist from Delft, looks at skin and says, basically, I think we just have fish scales on us there. The body is becoming a more mechanical enterprise. So the body is becoming a set of glands, and like animals and fish and trees, it's how you get your sap in and out of your body now.
Here in Life Matters, it's the skin I'm in, how we've understood and interpreted our skin over time, with Evelyn Welsh, who's Professor of Renaissance Studies at King's College London, and also Dr. Rachel Manifold, who's a modern-day dermatologist at Malvern Dermatology in Adelaide. Rachel, in modern medicine, how much has changed just over the course of your career, say, in the understanding of skin and its function in these recent times?
I think one of the biggest things that we've now understand is the impact of the sun, of UV radiation onto the skin and the causing of skin cancers. So that's a huge push now in prevention of skin cancers. Australia and New Zealand has the highest rates in the world, both of non-melanoma and melanoma skin cancers. So that's probably been one of the biggest changes that we know that we need to change people's behaviour to try and prevent the outcome. Probably one of the other biggest areas of change has been the understanding that the skin does interact with the immune system at a very complex level, and that many of the skin diseases that were thought probably initially to be due to a skin issue, such as psoriasis, where it was thought that the disease was due to a maturation abnormality, we now know that there is a complex interaction with the immune system, and it's that combination with the immune dysregulation that then ultimately results in the sort of abnormal maturation of the skin.
So, Rachel, although it's understood in a different way medically, the skin continues to reveal the secrets of the internal body, is what you're saying, really. Can you tell if someone's lovesick, though?
I'm not sure. You can certainly tell changes of people's emotions still with blushing and sweating and heat and shaking, those sorts of things. But I'm not sure that I could read someone particularly through their skin.
No. What about mental health, though? Is that reflected in or on the skin?
Most definitely. The many skin diseases are impacted by mental health. So if we are stressed, our patients are stressed, it will often exacerbate many skin conditions.
Just on a very basic level, I know that if I had, a sudden stressful occurrence will bring out a pimple on my face, that's for sure.
Yes. That's right. So certainly acne is one that's is an example. Eczema, psoriasis are all driven when people feel stressed. You see that in children as well. When they're teething, unwell, their atopic dermatitis flares. So the mental health is certainly impacts the skin. Some skin diseases or some skin signs can actually give clues to people's mental health in reverse almost, such as conditions where there's an abnormalities of the hair. And also, obviously, the mental impact of some skin diseases can be quite significant, with people feeling ostracised, where others may feel that they're contagious or that they feel unattractive with their skin condition.
And I think that's a real connection to the past. We've been talking here about how the past is so different. Here, actually, the anxiety about, well, what do people see when they see you? That continues over multiple generations and indeed millennia there. So I have, from the 15th and 16th century, multiple recipes for getting rid of freckles, for managing pimples, for colouring your hair, colouring your beard, making sure that you avoid baldness, particularly for men. Men are really worried about their skin just as much as women are.
So then, Rachel, from what you're saying too, in modern dermatology, how much does it, or perhaps should it, overlap with other areas of medicine, other specialisations like psychiatry or even rheumatology maybe?
Yes. Well, there's definitely a lot of overlap in many other sort of areas of specialties of medicine. You've picked on two in particular. So psychiatry, there is a big overlap, and we often need to work with a psychiatrist to try and help or clear a skin disease. Rheumatology, there's a big overlap, particularly with psoriasis. Patients will often have the skin symptoms, but the joint symptoms as well. There's a lot of overlap with allergy, so allergy and immunology, as well as gastroenterology, a lot of diseases that are part of the gastrointestinal system will have developed changes and symptoms of the skin.
Well, Evelyn Welsh, during the Renaissance, people not only read the skin for cues and clues about health, but also, as I understand it, for astrological purposes.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us about that?
So you could buy books or manuscripts in the 15th century that told you how to read your palm, just as you do today. But you could also buy in the same manual something that would tell you how to read the lines in your forehead there, and the moles on your body there. So the lines on your forehead can tell you whether you will get riches, how many husbands or wives that you will have, whether you will be hanged yourself, or whether you will become a murderer. Yeah.
And this is to do with the number of lines.
Is to do with the number of lines, how they're actually mapped onto the constellations there, and the symbols and signs that you can read on certain parts of your body there. So in these particular manuals, they essentially take the human body, map the zodiac onto it, and then say, well, if the mole is in the sign of Jupiter with an ascension there, that means that you will come into a fortune tomorrow. Even in the 16th and 17th century, there was some doubt about the efficacy of this.
Have you tried it, though?
Do you know, I haven't had my palm read for a very long time.
But I'm thinking about the lines on your forehead or moles.
And one of the things you need to realise, again, when understanding the past, is that because we are born, in the way it's conceptualised, with a certain amount of moisture, and as you grow older, you dry out. And naturally, your skin starts to get thinner and thinner and more wrinkled. There's not much you can do about that loss of natural moisture, but there are lots of recipes for creams that will help.
Yes, well, you know, when you talk about the skin, you have to talk about beauty. What did people in the Renaissance do to enhance and beautify the skin? You've talked about some of the remedies for what were seen as flaws, but what were beauty products?
So there were lots of beauty products available, but primarily made with very dangerous things like lead, mercury, but, you know, some very nice things as well, like almond milk. But you might use dung as well in order to...
Dung?
Dung. Yes. Mm. So as one of the main ingredients to draw out the excrements within your body.
Oh, because right. It's use like some to draw
like.
It out.
It's like things attract like things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we're sort of talking about those being strange ingredients, but modern day cosmetic skincare products have all sorts of strange things in them too, you know, snail mucus.
Absolutely.
And who knows what else. Yeah, yeah. Rachel, I mean, using things like mercury and lead on your face is obviously very dangerous, yes. practice in the past. But I guess the what price beauty idea still applies in other things we do to the skin today. I mean, you earlier mentioned sun. I mean, getting a suntan with a sun lamp, for example, is one that comes to mind.
Yes, something we should not be doing. There are obviously it's a big industry and a big interest for people. People don't want to appear to have aged, and there is a lot of research into it. And as Evelyn's mentioned, there's certainly the loss of moisture as you get older, but there's also the breakdown of collagen and elastin, which gives that sort of a less voluminous appearance as we age and results in the wrinkles. There are many things that can be done are advocated to try and prevent skin ageing. But certainly one of the major things that's crucial is to use follow sun protection, so sunscreen and covering, because UV radiation is one of the biggest factors accelerating skin ageing. But there are a number of other things that certainly need to be done to try and look after your skin, which include to cleanse, to remove dirt and chemicals that we're all exposed to, and moisturising is crucial, but the sunscreen is certainly a big factor. There are a range of other cosmeceuticals that can be used, vitamin C and E, nicotinamide, vitamin A, many of which have some scientific evidence to have an impact on slowing down ageing. And healthy diet is obviously also important with antioxidants.
Sure. Rachel, do you think those Renaissance beauticians and people using the products knew that, for example, slapping lead on your face was not a good idea, that was poisonous? Evelyn.
So they knew it was not a good idea because what you were doing was disguising your true inner self there. They had no idea they were actually poisoning themselves at the same time.
Right. Rachel, do you reckon we know all there is to know about the skin now? I mean, how much could change in another 10 or 50, let alone 500 years, as far as our understanding of the skin goes?
I'm sure, and I definitely hope there'll be an incredible increase in our understanding of the skin. On a yearly level, we develop new medications to combat some of our most tricky skin diseases, such as psoriasis and atopic dermatitis. So I think there'll be an ongoing understanding of the skin, and probably our views will change ultimately again in a number of years.
Well, the past, present and future of the human skin. Dr. Rachel Manifold is a dermatologist in Adelaide, and Evelyn Welsh is Professor of Renaissance Studies at King's College London. Great to speak with both of you. Evelyn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Rachel, thanks to you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Life Matters.